In the grand theater of life, we all seek a comeback, a resurgence, a rekindling of our inner fire. But how do we spark that flame? Welcome to Reignite Resilience. This is not just another podcast. This is a journey, a venture into the heart of human spirit, the power of resilience, and the art of reigniting our passions.
Welcome back to another episode of Reignite Resilience. I am your co-host, Natalie Davis, and we are so happy to be back with you all this week. Pam, how's it going?
It is fabulous. It is Wednesday, and we're halfway through the week.
We enter into, and we think, this is going to be a doozy. This has been one of those weeks for sure.
This has been, you know, and it started that way on Monday when I looked at my calendar. I'm like, wow, what was I thinking?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm the same. I have two business trips this week and I'm at home in between the two trips. So I just got back last night and I'll head back out tomorrow afternoon. So it's one of those weeks. It's what we do. And I love it. I wouldn't trade it for anything. So
exactly.
Oh my goodness. Well, I am super excited about our episode today because we have another special guest joining us to share about their resiliency and the work and effort that they have taken upon them in terms of overcoming adversity. And I think we touched on this on our live. If you guys didn't check out our live, head on over to Facebook and look at our live that posted the first week of February. But, you know, what we realize is when we have our guest on, there's not just one adversity that they're typically facing. There are multiple things that have happened or either that they're currently facing or throughout their journey, this fabulous journey of this life that we're navigating through. So today is no exception. We have a fabulous guest. So I will turn it over to you, Pam, if you want to introduce our guests and we can dive right in.
Well, and this is kind of, we talked a little bit about it on our live Facebook that what has organically happened since we started this podcast is that friends, colleagues, listeners have reached out to us and said, I really think this person would be a great person to have on the podcast. And so this actually comes from Beth Killen. She was one of our guests. She's a good friend. She's my accountability partner, has been for years. We just met yesterday, actually. And so she introduced us to our next guest. So Mary Jo is joining us today, and we are so excited that she is here. And so Mary Jo is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a degree in accounting and management. She and her husband have three teenage children. Bless you. That's all I have to say. I have three kids and I've only had one teenager at a time. I can't imagine three. And then outside of work, she is basically traveling around the United States, running half marathons in every state. And so we'll put your full bio in there so that people can see all of the incredible things that you've done from nonprofit to everything else. I mean, you have done some incredible things, but what I want to do is dive into your story. So tell the listeners a little bit about you, and then we'll kind of just dive into some of the adversity that you faced and are currently facing.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here today. Thank you for having me. I'll start a little bit at the front end of me. You mentioned I went to University of Wisconsin. From Wisconsin, I grew up in Green Bay. But shortly after I graduated from Madison, I made my way to Chicago, then Detroit, and then Nashville. And I've been in Nashville now for over 28 years, and I love it here. And I grew up in the, you know, public accounting world, went into finance with nonprofits, and being part of the community has always been very engaging to me. It gives me a lot of energy. And so I'm very social. I like to hang out with friends, and running became social. So you mentioned my quest to do a half marathon in every state. So through that and some friends that kind of piqued my interest in running, that started. And gosh, it's been over 2 years ago that I, you know, went in for my 50-year-old colonoscopy. I went in at age 51 because I was healthy and fit. And when I was 50, it was the peak of COVID. And I thought they don't need an extra healthy body around. But unfortunately, I came out of that colonoscopy with stage 4 colon cancer. And it had already spread to my liver and my lung. And so it put a big change in my life trajectory as far as everything.
Yeah, getting that. So, and I'm 50, Natalie is Not quite a bit younger, but I'm not
50 yet.
Quite a bit younger. But for those of you who don't know, like you turn 50 and it's like, all right, you got to get a colonoscopy, you got to get a shingle shot, you got to do all of this stuff. Never do you imagine that you're going to get that phone call saying that, oh, by the way. And then for it to be the phone call that is stage four and, oh, by the way, it's moved to different parts of your body.
It just can get worse.
And
Mary Jo, you said that you mentioned like it, they said it's a 1% chance that something would come back. Is that right? That was as you were preparing to go into the appointment?
Yeah, they came and actually they were doing I'm at Vanderbilt and Research Hospital. They're always doing side studies. And they said, hey, can we do a blood sample? We really want somebody that's as healthy as you to do kind of this side sample, you know, the side study. And I thought, oh, I guess they don't need that blood anymore. I think they were, everybody just assumes everybody comes out of there with a clean bill of health.
And did you have any symptoms or anything that would make you believe anything was wrong?
I really didn't until, I will say, probably by the time it was, my colonoscopy is already scheduled. Some of it is just, and this is, you know, a lot of information, but this is what people don't want to talk about. And this is one of the reasons why colon cancer often goes undetected, because so much of it is, gets related, you know, the symptoms have to do with your bowel movements and nobody really wants to talk about that. So I didn't notice it until about 2 months before. And for me, it was just not going completely. It was just always feeling like there was a little bit more to go. New York City. And I thought, I'm going to have to find a public restroom all day long. And that's kind of how I remember that moment of, that was the first time it really bothered me that things didn't seem normal. But I mean, you hit 50 and people start to tell you, well, welcome to 50 and menopause and, you know, all these things change. And so, and especially as a runner, if I said to anybody that I didn't have normal bowel movements,
they're like, it's normal.
Yeah, that's running. Yeah. So welcome, welcome to 50, welcome to running, welcome to menopause, all of that.
Yeah. So with the running, what made you start running? What made you decide that you wanted to run all 50 states? Like, kind of share that with us.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun. I could tell you I am not a runner and I still never, but I think I probably have to admit I'm a runner after, two full marathons and 40 plus half marathons. But the only reason I really started getting back into it, I did it once in 2001 because a friend of mine was actually going through cancer. And at that time, there was some advertisement for the Susan G. Komen 5K. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I should try a 5K. And that's as far as I got. That was as good as my intention was to think I should. Okay. And my friend completed his treatment. He did the Chicago Marathon for Team and Training for Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And I got his thank you letter for my contribution on the day that this 5K should have been running in it. Mm. And I felt awful. I felt like he should not have had to run that race.
Yeah.
So it just stuck in my head. And the very next day I was at a business meeting and somebody had said they had just run the Chicago Marathon for Team and Training. And a friend of mine did that. And she said, it's amazing. You should do it. And I said, well, I guess if I didn't do the 5K, I should do the marathon. And that was I kind of said to me and myself, that was my punishment. You know, you'd get off the couch to do a 5K. You better do the marathon. So that was 2001. I did it. It was phenomenal experience with that organization and raising money. But that was a one and done. And I put that away until about 13, I think. A friend of mine did a Ragnar relay and she was telling me how 12 girls were in two vans and they did this 200-mile relay that took 30 plus hours. And it's just one in and one out and one in and one out. And it's, and then I also had some cousins do it up in Wisconsin and I didn't know that they were related. I didn't know Ragnar relays were a thing. And my cousin was telling me how somebody got lost and they ran extra and it was the middle of the night. It was 2 a.m. It was like a country road. And I said, that sounds, dangerous. It sounds adventurous. It sounds silly. I was like, and I want in.
Sign me up. So, exactly.
I was thinking that sounds awful. I don't want in. You're like, yes, I want to do that.
That was it. I wanted to do a Ragnar relay, but I didn't run. So, they said they were looking for another person. I signed up. I said, I want in. And so I just started training and I thought I've got to run three legs, of this relay, over roughly 24, 30 hours. We're slow. Some teams do it faster than this, but yes, you know, we were the social team, not the racing team. And so that is literally, we did a Ragnar, I did another Ragnar, and then the half marathon started. And as we had done Ragnars in different states, then we did a half marathon in another state. One of my friends said, you know, we really should do a half marathon in every state. And I said, we should? She said, yeah. I said, okay. Wow.
Is this the same friend that told you that someone got lost, or is that a different person?
No, different.
Okay.
Different. Yeah. Different person. Wow.
Different influences.
Seed was planted, and then that was it.
It has become something very social for us. And for the weekends, we laugh. You know, when we do the Vegas half marathon, we had 16 of us go. Iowa and Nebraska, 3 of us showed up.
Yes. I
mean, you know, it just kind of depends. Sorry.
What state it's in.
Yeah. But they really are, we call them runcations. And it's sometimes it's the girls' weekends. Sometimes, you know, the spouses come with us and it's just time to get away. And we've had a lot of fun seeing the states.
I love it. So how many states have you done a half marathon or marathon in?
Yeah. As of last month, we've got 32 down and 18 to go.
That's okay, awesome. So 32 down. And so how many have you run since your diagnosis?
So I was diagnosed November 8th officially, and I ran a race in Tulsa that same month before I had any treatment. So that was number 24. So I wasn't even halfway. And that was an interesting race because in your head, 2 weeks before, I didn't know anything was wrong.
You were perfectly healthy in your mind.
And so now you run a race knowing you have stage 4 cancer. You don't know if it's going to feel different. It shouldn't, but your mind can get in there. And so anyway, we had a great time. It was a fun race, a fun weekend. It was a couple. So my friend and I that are doing this, our husbands came and we had a blast. And then the next week I got my port and started chemo.
And so it looks like you've done several then, so since then.
Yeah, so I could kind of figure out I would have I called them good weekends, bad weekends, because my treatment days were Thursdays. Okay. So those were always rough weekends, and then by Monday I was fine, I'd go back to work. So we would look for races in states on my good weekends. You know, we would just kind of say we knew every other weekend. So I did that one before, and then I did 4 during one of my rounds of chemo. Mm-hmm. And then we did another 4 after another round. And then surgery this last summer put me out for quite a bit. But then just last month, we did my first one back.
Wow.
So I've done 9 since I've had actual treatment, 10 since my diagnosis.
Okay.
Well, and Mary Jo, you said your original diagnosis date is November the 8th, but you mentioned that you knew before you got the call. Talk to us about that. How did you know that? What was happening?
Well, you know, after the colonoscopy, they kind of bring you into the little room. And for most folks, they're going to say, everything was great. Come on back in 5 years or come back in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they brought me back in the room and they said, we did find, you know, an area of concern. And, you know, we think it's cancer. And I just kind of sat there listening. And then I remember her even saying, like, do you want to see the picture? And like, sure. And not to share too much. I mean, it was black. I mean, and, you know, so I was like, well, I know that's not supposed to be, you know, so I just, I left that room going. And, you know, and she said, you know, we have to wait for pathology. And I remember it was late on a Thursday afternoon. And so I didn't get a call till Monday. And so I just knew. And I talked to a friend that weekend and I said, well, I know it's cancer. And she said, what do you mean? She's like, it's not like it was like big and black. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Exactly what it was. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, even that friend, I don't think she expected that to be the answer. But I mean, so I guess I just knew. And I don't know. I didn't have this moment of complete shock. I didn't have a breakdown. I mean, she told me, don't go Googling anything.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And to this day, I have not. The
Good for
only
you.
Time I've Googled anything was when I was getting a hepatic artery infusion pump, and it was new, and I just kind of had to figure out more about that. So.
Yeah. Wow. When you said that when you were diagnosed, you did a run before you started treatment, and you said that it was going to be different. So what did it feel like? What were the thoughts that were going through your head when you were running that run? Because I imagine it was a completely different run for you.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the different thoughts. I mean, some of it is, I do like to not go places when I don't think about the worst things. There's a certain dose of reality, though, that you can't really avoid that all the time. Mm-hmm. I just think during the race, you kept thinking like, well, I feel fine. I don't feel like I have cancer, mm-hmm. you know, and you know you do. I mean, you're not, it's not like, well, maybe they're wrong. I mean, at that point, I had already gone through several, you know, CTs and MRIs and all the blood work. I mean, it's not like in your mind you think it might not be, you know, be cancer, mm-hmm. but you're wondering like, I don't feel sick. I don't feel any different. And so it's kind of this idea, I think, throughout our lives at many turns, not something just as serious as cancer, but if somebody tells you something that you are, you know, how much do you absorb that? Mm-hmm. How much do you let that change the way you feel? So I think that was my biggest thing is, you know, you're running, you know, and you're taking steps and you're thinking, I don't feel sick. I feel fine. And then I think there were still some things at that point that weren't 100% known. And I remember having a conversation with my friend about, did I have operable cancer in my liver? I mean, if it wasn't operable, the outlook's even worse, although I think in hindsight, it was pretty bad anyway. But you wonder, is this my last race? Like, am I going to get to number 24? Like, that's mm-hmm. not exciting. Yeah. It's not exciting to think I did 24 states. Like, it's only exciting if you do all 50.
Yeah.
So I think that was the other thing. So it was one, it was this like assessment of, am I really different? And two, you know, is this the last one I'm going to do?
Yeah. So a lot of just kind of processing through those emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And we talk about this a lot, and I think you're touching on it when it's, you get the diagnosis, is this going to become part of your identity? Is this who you are? Right? Like, so, and it, whatever it may be, it could be a diagnosis. It could become, you know, am I a runner or am I not a runner? Right. It all comes back to that. Is this part of my identity? Is this who I am? And so it's interesting that you were actually processing through that as you were racing, right? It's like, I'm going to still run. I feel fine. I don't feel like I have cancer.
Right.
Just keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and then even with the ones, you know, obviously I've gotten slower and slower and slower. And now, honestly, I'm doing a walk jog, you know, because from surgery, I really haven't rebounded. You know, there's side effects from chemo. I still have nerve damage in my feet. More recently, over the last couple of months, it's really set into my joints. And so I've lost a lot of mobility and I have a lot of stiffness. And so, you know, I'm really not up to par, but I never was setting any records anyway. So it's not really the time that we always say, it's not the time on the clock that matters. It's the time we spend together that matters.
Yeah.
So we just enjoy the races. And I really should trademark WOG, because that's my new thing. It's a walk and a jog.
Ooh, I like that, a WOG.
These days I'm WOGing.
Yes. Pam and I have done a race together and we determined at that time, I mean, I used the term race loosely. Everyone else was racing. We were participating. Yes. But we determined like we can power speed walk much faster than we can jog. Just do that. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's better for your body too. So
absolutely.
So WOGing is promoted.
Trademark we'll it. Use it.
I'll buy the t-shirt.
You're free to use it.
Yes. Oh, we can start WOGing clubs. Oh my gosh, I'm excited.
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is that you've never stopped. You know, it would have been very easy to get that diagnosis and not run that race that you ran right after you found out when you were like, I feel fine. It would be very easy to just say, okay, well, I'm done with the amount that I've done. I'm not going to do anymore. And you've not done that. What has been your drive? What has given you that focus to just keep pushing forward, pushing through?
Normalcy. I think everybody craves normalcy. You don't want to be different for a bad reason, right? Yeah. So I didn't want to be, like you said, my known for cancer. You can't escape it. It certainly is a part of me, but you crave the normalcy that you had before. So that was my thing. And I wanted it to still be my thing, you know, the racing, you know, and, you know, the other thing that keeps you going, if I was doing those alone, I promise you, I wouldn't be doing them. But, you know, with my girlfriend that is by my side, you know, no matter how slow I run, she's going to run as slow as I am. So being able to have that group, you know, not just there's, you know, just a really small number of us doing the States, but it's a larger group of friends that did all these Ragnars. And then it's just everybody everywhere. I mean, I'm fortunate to have really close friends in all the little places that I've lived and supporting me. So, I mean, without faith, you know, of just knowing you're not being punished, you got to get up every day and trust that there is a plan, and then surrounding yourself with good people and doing what you normally do. So I came to work every day. I mean, I had a choice on my chemo schedule. I could pick a Tuesday, which would mean I'd feel better by the weekends, or I could pick a Thursday, which means weekends wouldn't be good, but I'd be ready for work on Monday. Yeah. And I picked that. It was more normal to me to keep doing what I do, which is working. So, I think you have to have the normalcy. I think you have to surround yourself with the right people, and probably most importantly, your faith that, you know, there is a reason for everything and there is a plan.
Yeah, I love it. So I love the everyone wants normalcy, because I think it is true. It's, I mean, from the time we're young, we want a routine. We want things to be familiar to, because it feels safe to us. And so you wanted to just, let's just keep this momentum going. And then the power of community, I think that's a huge one. And you had found that tribe before the diagnosis, and you've leaned into that tribe. And I know it's hard for us, especially sometimes women, to ask for help from people. We just think that we can do it ourselves. But I love that you've leaned in to this tribe of women and are allowing them to run alongside you, walk alongside you,
walk alongside you. Yes,
whatever that is.
Yes, you're exactly right, though. It is.
We hope that you've enjoyed part one of our two-part interview with Mary Jo Wiggins. What an absolute delight to have her on the show with us. For her to share her own personal story as she has navigated through quite a few areas of adversity in her life. One thing that it boils down to that she has found consistency in is having normalcy in her life and having a strong community that she can lean into and lean on, and ultimately also leaning on her faith. Make sure that you come back and join us for part two, because we're going to continue to hear about what's happening in Mary Jo's life and what she has on the radar for the rest of this year through 2026. We'll see you soon. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Reignite Resilience. We hope that you had amazing ahas and takeaways. Remember to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, like it, and download the upcoming episodes. And if you know anyone in your life that is looking to continue to ignite their resilience, share it with them. We look forward to seeing you on our future episodes. And until then, continue to reignite that fire within your hearts.